News Radio WJPF, State Representative Patrick Windhorst. Patrick, good to talk to you again.
Good to talk to you, Tom. Thanks for having me on.
So, the governor, about a week ago, a little less, I guess, signed the budget. What's the story on the budget this year? I mean, it's huge. You could start there, I guess.
Well, it is huge. As you know, Tom, I've been in office now 5 years, and I'm thinking back to the first budget that was voted on when I was elected and served in Springfield, and I believe it was about $38 billion. So in 5 years, we've gone from $38 billion to over $50 billion in our state budget, which just pretty clearly demonstrates the growth in the state government. And, of course, we know we've heard a lot about the programs that are the money is being spent on. The concern that we have on our side, basically two. One is this budget truly balanced? The governor and the Democrats in the General Assembly, of course, will argue, yes, it is, and they'll give their reasons. We believe they haven't fully accounted for a lot of the costs that are going to occur this year, one of them being the AFSCME contract, the other being the medical coverage that our state's providing undocumented immigrants. And we believe that those things, among others, will cause ultimately us to be in a deficit at the end of the year.
All right, now here's the thing about the AFSCME contract, I think the governor, if I take it and try to dilute it down to its most basic components, in his comments last week is we don't put that number out for AFSCME because we are negotiating, so we don't tell them a number. It's put in line items across all the other agencies and departments because you don't say how much you're going to give them before the negotiations, because negotiations start, because that's where they'll start and say, well, that's the figure, so we'll start there.
And I heard the governor make those comments. I understand where he's coming from. The concern that we've heard expressed from our side is the inflation in the country has been much higher than in last contract negotiations, and probably going back 20 years. And that the amount of money provided to cover what is likely to occur in these contract negotiations doesn't adequately take that into account.
And the possible effects of lower revenues because there's less money pulsing through the system now.
Right. Well, you know, we've cut back, seen a cutback from the federal government from the COVID-related funds that were sent. And, you know, we saw a spike with inflation going up. Now with inflation somewhat easing, the revenues to the state are going to come down. If there is a recession after we've had high inflation, which often occurs, then we're going to see more revenue reductions for the state, which will put us in a big hurt. Our side, we suggest that we keep our fiscal house stable and in order, and we look for ways to return money to the taxpayers, which, you know, we've talked many times, Tom, about what are, I believe, some of the huge problems in the state, and that is the people leaving our state. And if you ask people why they leave our state, one of the most common answers, if not the most common, is the tax burden that they have when they're here. And so we have to address that problem, and that we address the out-migration of the state, all the other problems get easier to address.
It's interesting you mention this because we talk about taxes and property taxes. And inflation, first off, I'd argue with anybody who says inflation is letting up, and I would urge them to join me at the grocery store this Saturday, you know, because I don't see it, and it's not being reflected in some of the bills that I pay when it comes to food. And there's another item that I think lends to you, what you were talking about, people packing up and moving because they can't afford to stay. Foreclosures across the nation are up to 35,196 property foreclosures, up 14% from the year before, this number based in May's numbers. Illinois is number one. One in 2,144 housing units are in foreclosure in the state of Illinois. We're number one. Maryland, number two, at one per 1,203. And then New Jersey, number three. So that's something new that I just learned this weekend.
Well, and you pointed out two of the top three states have the highest property taxes in the nation, Illinois and New Jersey, which I would say is helping to drive that. We may also see that as an indication that the economy is slowing down, particularly in the states you mentioned.
You know, when it comes to money, though, the story where we've been talking about it for a couple of weeks, legislative pay raises, and finding out that the legislators, and I remember when this law was passed, you can't give yourself a pay raise. It doesn't go into effect until the next person comes online in your seat. It apparently didn't stop people in the legislature, and the president, the governor, adjusted that number when he was signing the legislation downward.
Yeah, this went into effect many GAs ago, General Assemblies ago. What the law is we as members of the General Assembly cannot get a pay raise during our term. It has to be effective for the next term, any formal adjustment in the pay. However, when there was a law passed several General Assemblies ago which said each year there could be a cost of living adjustment for the General Assembly members' pay, which is deemed to be part of our pay. One of the things that was a problem with this budget is that law that was passed said that the pay would go up by the rate of inflation or 5%, whichever was less. And the budget that was passed by the House and Senate had a 5.5% pay increase, which violates the law that was passed before. Now, the governor has addressed this with reducing the line item in his veto, that reduction. But it just shows the focus, unfortunately, is how much money can we look to give people for pay increases and not make sure we're following the law, which should be the primary focus.
Or the fact that there were two legislative pay raises that are approved within a year.
Exactly.
I mean,
you know, we have people in our communities that are hurting, they're struggling. We just talked about it. You talked about foreclosures in our state. Our focus needs to be on addressing the real problems that people are facing. You know, I believe we should go back and remove the law that provides for the automatic COLA. It would require us to pass a bill that would be effective the next General Assembly. We need to move forward and do that to show our good faith as members of the General Assembly that we are concerned about the problems people are facing and not what our pay may be.
Mm. The one other issue that didn't involve money, I guess it does at some level, it's ideology for me, I guess, is the ability to be able to complain, take your grievances to the state of Illinois. And that law was signed by the governor, I believe, on Friday.
It was. And to me, this law is one of the biggest slaps in the face to people outside of Cook and Sangamon counties that we could see. Essentially, they're saying your local court is not good enough for you to go to court and challenge a law that's been passed by the General Assembly or one of the many executive orders that have been put down by the governor. You have to go to either Cook County or Sangamon County. Now, Tom, you know where I live. Metropolis is actually closer to the state capitol in Tennessee than it is the state capitol in Illinois, and, of course, almost as close to Atlanta, Georgia, as it is to Chicago. So for people in my community to have to go great distances to challenge unconstitutional law, it's just fundamentally unfair.
All right. Now, I've had some, I haven't talked to everybody I want to talk to about yet, but now's your chance because I've talked to some, and it's interesting because in speaking with a lawyer who's by the way, is it certified to appear before the Supreme Court? I know there's a procedure before you can operate at that level, but they're those kind of lawyers, I guess. And they said to me, there's a precedent for this. The Illinois State Board of Elections, you have to go to, you know, one of those places, one of those locations where the State Board of Elections in Springfield, you have to go there to do this. And that sets a precedent for this. Well, at the same time, I questioned that. I said, okay, if the precedent's set, but still the ability to be able to take grievance to the government is yes. Well, then what about, you know, the complaint that, you know, people are venue shopping? Is this the administration venue shopping? Well, it could be. There's so much involved. This is a really loaded question, a loaded law.
It is. The defense of the law was the Attorney General's office is just spread too thin, going to different counties to defend unconstitutional laws or allegedly unconstitutional laws and executive orders. This is the same Attorney General's office that requested additional authority to go after crisis pregnancy centers and gun manufacturers and engage in other forms of investigation and prosecution. They requested more responsibility, that office did. And then at the same time they're requesting all this responsibility, the office is saying, we don't have enough staff to do this other thing, which is more fundamental. The constitutionality of our laws and executive orders is one of the most fundamental issues in our government. And, you know, you can point to other areas where venue is limited. The General Assembly or an executive order of the governor is constitutional. That is fundamental to our system, and every court in every courthouse in our state should stand on equal footing in hearing those issues.
Will it be found unconstitutional if for no other reason because there's a carve-out for labor unions?
That's going to be a primary argument. There is a due process issue that was held in another case where venue was limited to Cook and Sangamon on repayment of student loans and lawsuits involving those. This case is about 20 years old, I believe, and the Illinois Supreme Court said it was a violation of due process to require those suits only in those two counties. I think that is the precedent that's going to be argued, that this new statute also violates due process, and ultimately it will work its way up to the Illinois Supreme Court for a decision, perhaps even the U.S. Supreme Court on constitutional due process grounds. I know there's already a lawsuit that's being it's in the works. I don't know if it's been filed yet, but will be, to challenge the constitutionality of that statute.
Now, one of our listeners just texted me on the American Monument text line saying they argued that the Sangamon County Court was Republican, so it offset Cook. I don't remember hearing that, but Andy sent that in, and he's always good for a piece of information.
But that's accurate, and I believe that's true, that the judges in Sangamon County are Republican. And of course, I think they're predominantly, if not all, Democrat in Cook County. But it's really not an issue of partisanship, which at least it shouldn't be.
It shouldn't be.
Right, exactly. It should be an issue of fundamental fairness. Judges should hear cases and rule on them, and individuals should be able to go to the court in their county and get that justice.
You know, I talked to Dale Fowler last week about, you know, food deserts. Matter of fact, Caro has their first grocery store opening in new first grocery store in 7 years opening on Friday.
That's right.
Food deserts are a big issue in your district. I know Senator and I have been talking about that. I know you're working on this as well.
Yes, there are multiple efforts, and Senator Fowler's been one of the leaders in these efforts to address the food deserts we have in southeastern Illinois, but throughout the state. There was a bill passed that would provide some incentives for investment into providing or relieving the issues with food deserts in counties or areas that don't have grocery stores to provide fresh food. The issue that we've run into is and why these food deserts have been created in a lot of respects, there are additional costs operating them. Energy costs are high, and that causes the prices to go up, which means they can't compete with larger big box stores when it comes to prices. So people who can go to those larger chains and shop, and the people who can't then are left without adequate resources. So there is an effort to try to address that. The whole community in various places is coming together to try to address it, and hopefully we'll be able to, because, you know, having the ability to buy fresh food, hopefully in your own community, something that all of us want.
I bet. Now, before I let you go, I'm intimidated by the amount of legislation signed by the governor on Friday. I'm always worried that I'm going to miss something. And after listening to Robert's reports this morning, I'm pretty sure I have missed a couple of items. Legal terms, you know, person who gave birth, and there's all these changes. If you would say, okay, maybe Tom missed something, and it's really important out of the 90 bills or the 566 total that went to the governor's desk, what would it be?
You know, this has been my first session as floor leader, so I'm charged with kind of knowing all the bills that come through, and it's a staggering number. I think over 500, if I have the most recent number that went through the House and the Senate. You know, there were some ones that didn't get a lot of attention. One involved the nuclear moratorium and lifting that moratorium on nuclear power plants that I think has the potential to ease the issues we're seeing with energy. There was, and I was supportive of that measure. There were several that I was not supportive of. I mentioned two of them, the ability for the Attorney General to go after crisis pregnancy centers and, and gun manufacturers. Those two are ones that we spoke and fought heavily against. Myself, I was able to get a few pieces of legislation through, even in the super minority. We had the ability for disabled police officers who are off on disability to have a age cap where they can't be recalled to work. And basically, before this bill, they could be recalled at any time, even over the age of 60. This caps it at 60. And another one involving juvenile medical records and how they were admitted into court. So the number is staggering, the number of bills that are passed in any given session. A lot of the ones that make the news are the ones that have our focus and get our attention. And, you know, I think when we spoke last, I mentioned there were some that we wish we'd seen something on, such as the major ethics reform for our state, which we didn't see. So with each session comes a whole host of new bills, and we try as best we can to let the public know what's going on.
And there were a lot of them. 566 was our count, but there were like 9,000 proposals at some point between the Senate and House, maybe even more. I tried to keep track, but like I said, I always worry when there's too many targets for my attention span. I worry about that and where somebody got by that's something we should talk about. So if that changes, next time when you want to talk, we'll bring it up, okay? Because I know there's more stuff.
Definitely.
You know, 566 stuff. Some of it is small stuff, insurance regulation, things like that. But, you know, it's not small if you're Bill Ecker and you work down at State Farm. You know,
yeah.
It's a big deal to me, pal. So,
they've got to keep their eyes on those things. Yeah.
Right. Because there are a lot of moving parts every day. And this year, there's a ton of them. State Representative Patrick Windhorst. Thanks for your time, Patrick.
Thanks, Tom. I appreciate it.
840.